at 140 kilometers per hour toward each other in their relative closing speed. That's it. They're still out of touch behind the moon, acquisition of signal. They should come around the other side of the moon with live TV on and voices babbling away in 36 minutes.
Well, Rep Turner, just before we lost signal, we weren't hearing a great deal from Pete Conrad and Alan Bean, and quite frankly, I'm accustomed to hearing a great deal from them, after, particularly after that last moonwalk of some 3 hours and 55 minutes. You suppose they're tired or are just quite busy?
Not at all. This has been a long day for them. They have been enjoying themselves immensely. I know they're keyed up. They're busy. There's quite a bit of activity. There are so many things to be done at this point. They are keyed up and going at it. And this is procedure which is requires their own concentration, and it's not one in which there are moments for the very ebullient outgoing comments they've been making. And I'm sure there's no reason for us not hearing from them other than the fact that they were busy. Walter Sullivan, the science editor of the New York Times, commented on the EVA period just hours ago that they certainly seem to be having the time of their lives. And all of the reporters and correspondents gathering around in our newsroom down here have been commenting upon this outgoing crew and how vocal they were, trying to share everything that they're experiencing with us and with Mission Control. It makes Mission Control's job much easier.
It does indeed. And one final question before I leave you for the moment, Rhett. We're accustomed to having at least a song from Pete Conrad. Have we had any humming today?
We've had the tum-tum-tum-tums on the surface. We haven't had much of that since they've been back inside. No, they've been busy. There was one little comment. I heard one little vocal comment and a few laughs as something funny happened. But that's about it. They have been busy.
A highly articulate crew, even though they're extremely busy.
Vocal, anyway.
Indeed.
Some people say noisy, but we agree with just vocal.
The Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. The lunar module, Intrepid, now moving ever closer to the mother ship, Yankee Clipper, for that rendezvous and docking. That should come about in a little over an hour from now. Our continuous coverage will pick up again following this summary of late world news.
Apollo 12 is within about an hour of another major hurdle. Rendezvous, and then docking between the command ship Yankee Clipper and Intrepid, the spider-shaped lunar landing vehicle. Intrepid, with moonwalkers Charles Conrad and Alan Bean at the controls, lifted off the lunar surface at about 2.5 hours ago. Minutes later, the crew achieved lunar orbit and began an intricate game of catch-up with Richard Gordon, who remained behind aboard the Yankee Clipper in lunar orbit. Conrad and Bean have with them a priceless store of moon rocks and dust collected during the two moonwalks and highlighted their 31.5-hour stay on the moon. They left behind several scientific experiments designed to unlock more of the moon's mysteries. The reunited astronauts will spend another day in lunar orbit taking pictures of future landing sites for other men, then set course for home. A Nigerian airliner crashed and burned with the loss of all passengers and crew as it prepared to land at Lagos on a flight from London. Correspondent Fred Brown reports from Lagos that the plane carried 75 passengers and a crew of 12. News dispatches from London identified the plane as a VC-10 and reported that the passengers were mostly Nigerian Airlines personnel returning to Lagos. At the Vietnam talks in Paris, American Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge called once more for serious negotiations to end the war. He noted that the United States has proposed a mutual withdrawal of all outside forces from South Vietnam within 1 year, and he said the United States would be prepared to consider any proposal for a mutual withdrawal even sooner to end the Vietnam conflict. The communist side insisted once more on a unilateral withdrawal of U.S. troops and dissolution of the Saigon government. The United States and the Soviet Union held their second working session of the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks in Helsinki, this time at the Soviet Embassy. It was announced only that the negotiators will meet again next Monday at the American Embassy. The closed Helsinki meetings are described as preliminary and exploratory, with each nation seeking a basis for future substantive talks. A Lebanese army spokesman says about 100 men armed with machine guns today attacked a military guard post at Nabatiya in southern Lebanon. He said 9 of the attackers and 6 soldiers were wounded in the clash that followed. The Lebanese spokesman expressed regret over the incident, noting that efforts are still underway to ensure that the Cairo Accord between Lebanon and Arab guerrilla leaders is put into effect. He said it appears that a number of persons are being instigated to carry arms in an attempt to undermine implementation of the accord. The State Department condemned a resolution by the United Arab Republic Assembly blaming the United States for lack of progress toward a settlement of the Middle East problem. A State Department spokesman said the Egyptian statement is based on false charges against the United States. He also said that American-Soviet talks on the Middle East will resume soon. Radio Vienna reports that 2 men, presumably of Polish nationality, hijacked a Polish airliner with 18 persons aboard and forced the pilot to land the plane in the Austrian capital. The United Nations General Assembly meets today to consider a draft resolution asking UN approval of the Lusaka Manifesto, which calls for peaceful solutions to the problems of southern Africa. 45 nations co-sponsored the resolution on the manifesto, which was presented to the General Assembly several weeks ago by Cameroon President Amadou Ahidjo on behalf of the Organization of African Unity. Voice of America correspondent Edward Conley reports from the UN that African delegates described the document as an authoritative expression of their views and policies on questions of southern Africa. Japanese Prime Minister Eisaku Sato and President Richard Nixon are discussing economic matters at their second round of talks, now underway at the White House. The talks yesterday concerned the return of Okinawa to Japan and Asian matters. A joint communique is scheduled to be issued Friday. Before starting today's talks, the two leaders viewed a model of the United States Pavilion for the World Exposition at Osaka next year. British Prime Minister Harold Wilson will visit Washington January 27th to confer with President Nixon. It will be the Labor Party leader's first visit to the United States since Mr. Nixon became president early this year. The two leaders are expected to discuss Vietnam, NATO, and a proposal by the Warsaw Pact for talks on European security. French President Georges Pompidou has scheduled a visit to Washington in February. French Foreign Minister Maurice Schumann has arrived in Tunisia for a 3-day official visit at the invitation of Foreign Minister Habib Bourguiba Jr. Mr. Bourguiba held official talks in Paris earlier this year. The two officials are to discuss closer relations in the political and economic fields. Chile's armed forces are on a state of alert in Santiago province, which includes the capital. There has been unrest in Chile's armed forces. Some elements are reported demanding faster action on pay increases. The raises were promised after a recent revolt by an army unit. Dispatches say the state of alert gave the government power to control news and make arrests without warrants. President Nixon told representatives of U.S. and World Refugee Relief Organizations that the number of the world's homeless has increased by 3 million during the past 10 years. The latest United Nations report puts the number of world refugees at 17 million. The president's message was delivered to a two-day Washington conference of representatives of 76 U.S. refugee relief agencies and several international organizations. The president praised work done by the organizations in resettling refugees as a rare and inspiring international achievement. Private funeral services were held in a Roman Catholic church in Hyannisport, Massachusetts, for Joseph P. Kennedy, father of a president and two senators, who died Tuesday at age 81. At the widow's request, the priests celebrating the Mass wore white vestments instead of the traditional purple of mourning. The sole surviving son, Senator Edward Kennedy, eulogized his father. Greece has offered to stage a consolation football tournament for the European national teams which failed to qualify for next year's World Soccer Cup finals in Mexico. The Greek Football Federation said proposed rules for such an event would be sent to concerned European countries by the end of the year. That's the news. John Cooley reporting.
From the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, Texas, the Voice of America is on the air bringing you live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. We are now some 144 hours and 49 minutes into that mission. About 15 minutes ago, we had the maneuver, the terminal phase initiation, the firing of the thrusters aboard the lunar module Intrepid, placing the craft in an orbit of about 111 by 79 kilometers, coming ever closer to the mother spacecraft, the Yankee Clipper, circling the moon in a near-circular orbit of 100 kilometers. At the moment, the Intrepid is on the far side of the moon, as is the Yankee Clipper. We should acquire communications with them in about 21 minutes from now. Let's go to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, for a late status report, and correspondent Rhett Turner.
On our acquisition of signal clock, 24 minutes, 17 seconds until the command module comes around the moon. They're not giving a display on the lunar module because they should be together at that time. Terminal phase initiation occurred 14 minutes ago. As the two spacecraft were behind the moon from our view, and at TPI, or terminal phase initiation, the thrusters fire to begin sending the spacecraft up closer, send Intrepid from its 80-mile circular orbit higher and higher and higher and closer to Yankee Clipper in its 110-mile circular orbit. They give some readings for burn time, the initial TPI burn time, 22.1 seconds. Now, the way they come up to the command module in what is called TPF, or terminal phase finalization, is at such an angle that thrusting straight forward brings them on closer and closer. There are some angle procedures which are visual angle procedures. In other words, if Pete can see Yankee Clipper out in front of him, by thrusting toward it, he goes toward it. This is not necessarily true in this crazy thing called orbital mechanics. We Earthlings have difficulty understanding some of that. You realize both of them are going at orbital velocities of some 5,000 kilometers, 5,000 to 6,000 kilometers per hour. And so when you make a maneuver relative to another craft up there with you, almost in formation, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go toward it. But the relative position of the two spacecraft as they're moving around the moon in orbit is such that by thrusting directly toward the spacecraft, as he sees it out the window in his small alignment devices there, Pete will indeed move toward the spacecraft. The initial TPI burn starts them moving up into the higher orbit on that joining course. However, throughout TPI, he can continue to fire his small reaction control system thrusters and move closer and closer and closer. He also watches the rendezvous radar tracking. In fact, this is primary when you are some 90 kilometers away. If the tracking light on Intrepid has burned out, as Pete thinks it has, then Yankee Clipper can't see him. Dick Gordon there watching, waiting. The Earth says that there is a current load on that bulb. The bulb is drawing current in the tracking light, and Yankee Clipper should see it, but Pete believes it's burned out because it's not flashing out there in front of him. But Pete should be able to see the command module as he approaches it, and Dick Gordon is going to have a camera in his window pointed at Intrepid, a film camera, a motion picture camera, taking pictures of Intrepid as it comes up. You'll see the moon below Intrepid as it approaches. Gordon will also have the live television camera pointing out the window, and we here on Earth, and many of you, our listeners around the world, may be able to tune in that TV picture also through the foreign broadcast pool services. This is being fed all over the world, this live TV rendezvous maneuver. And we hope that many of you may be listening to us and watching the television picture when it comes on about 20 minutes from now. The TPI having been accomplished, and at this point, it's at pilot's discretion how he thrusts on up closer and closer. As they get closer and closer, the relative velocity between the two spacecraft will become less and less. They begin at TPI moving toward each other at some 140 kilometers per hour relative speed.
At this point, I'd like to reintroduce our colleague from NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, Bill Land, Apollo missions engineer. Bill, one of the first actions after the two craft have redocked and Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are back in the mothership will be to jettison the limb. But we have something of an unusual plan for the limb this time, the carrying out of maneuvers to make it impact on the lunar surface. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, Bill. About 2 hours after they dock, they will perform a retrograde maneuver of the unmanned limb. Now, what will happen in between docking and this maneuver is that the crew will transfer to the command module. They will take all of the gear with them that they picked up on lunar surface, the sample containers, and the bag containing the parts of the surveyor, and also that bulky TV camera that we hoped was going to record in real time what they were doing on a lunar surface. They're bringing that back for examination also.
You mean that ding-a-ling, as Pete called it?
I wouldn't go so far as to call it. He knows more about it than I do, so let him describe it that way if he likes.
That was Pete's term there.
That's right. I can't blame him too much. He was very unhappy, of course, with the fact that it didn't work. And many of us here were very unhappy, too. I think the TV audience certainly was.
The camera in the command module is still working, and that's the one we hope to see pictures from when they come into view.
That's right.
Well, let me say one word for communications, though, on the lunar surface. They were the best I think we've ever heard, particularly during the two EVAs. Would you agree with that, gentlemen?
They were the most we've ever heard, too.
The most, yes.
Oh, without a doubt.
A complete running commentary of everything that Pete Conrad and Alan Bean were doing from the two men themselves.
An interesting aside to that is that the transcript, people here in the news center, Pete and Al were saying so much, they were talking so much that the stenographer is transcribing everything they say and printing it out for newsmen. We're running 2 to 3 hours behind time in getting it printed up. There was so much commentary, so much talk that the guys were giving us from on the surface of the moon. They were truly sharing their experience with all of us here on Earth.
Rhett, you have the countdown clock displayed there. How much
17,
time?
17 minutes, 20 seconds.
Before we have communications with the mothership, the Yankee Clipper, and hopefully at almost the same time with the lunar module Intrepid.
Bill, I have some information on what the family's reactions were, what the wives and children thought of seeing Conrad and Gordon there on the surface. Pete Conrad's wife says he doesn't usually go dum-de-dum-dum-dum, you know, dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, like that, when he's working around their home in Timber Cove down here. I would almost be willing to bet I've heard him do that a bit on Earth. He's a real puckish little character, very happy and friendly and outgoing, loves people. Sue Bean and Clay Bean, the two children of Al Bean, started watching the first EVA, and both of them went to sleep in the middle of it. Amy Sue is 7 years old, and Clay is almost 14. They had to be up for school the next day. Sue Bean said that she was sorry that the... This is Mrs. Alan Bean, said she was sorry the TV didn't work, but it was not really that important as long as the mission was going so well. She says, I know they'll bring back some marvelous pictures. Barbara Gordon, whose husband Dick is circling overhead in Yankee Clipper, said she felt relief, joy, delight, and excitement after Al and Pete landed. And Jane Conrad, Pete's wife, another very lovely and outgoing brunette young lady, said, I'm just as happy and as excited as I can be when she heard her husband hopping all over the lunar surface. And one of Pete's children has now gone into a lunar module mode with one of his buddies up the street. This is Peter, 14 years old. They've got a big box prepared to simulate a lunar module, and they're going to practice as though they are on the lunar surface for about 2 days. Now, how they're going to get their food is sort of a family secret. Some of the activities of the families back here on Earth watching.
You know, perhaps one of the unsung heroes on this flight is Dick Gordon, the command module pilot, who sat up there for, well, what, over 32 hours now, alone. A very busy man, was he not, Bill Land?
Well, I think he was able to relax a little bit while he was up there, but he had a great a number of chores to do, and one of them was just keeping that spacecraft in the right configuration and ensuring that all his systems were working. But in addition to that, he was taking photographs, he was sighting the spacecraft and even the Surveyor, which we never expected, as he'd pass over each time. He was recording some of the conversation that was occurring just in the event that we weren't able to catch it all on the Earth. And then he could send that information back or bring it back to us. And he was conducting one experiment while he was up there also, experiment to take different pictures of the lunar surface with a ganged array of cameras with different filters and films in them.
Norm Guerin?
Bill Land, a little earlier we had a fleeting glimpse into the future of space. We were talking about future space missions, and you brought up a rather exciting and ambitious program. I think a lot of people perhaps would like to hear about the Lunar Rover. If it's for the future, perhaps we'll be talking about it sometime on VOA. Could you give us a preview?
Well, I certainly hope we will be talking about it in the future on VOA, because we do have definite plans now. In fact, have let a contract to develop the Lunar Rover. This is a four-wheeled vehicle. A very lightweight vehicle. It weighs about 400 pounds, as the specifications are now. And it will be powered electrically by batteries, the same type of batteries that we use in the lunar module. The lunar module is being reconfigured somewhat to open up a storage area for this vehicle, such that we will not have to remove things from the lunar module. We can still carry experiments and carry this rover or roving vehicle. Now, the rover, as I said, will be powered electrically and have the capability of moving as much as 15 kilometers away from the lunar module and back again. That is a total distance of 30 kilometers that it will be able to move on the lunar surface without recharging the batteries. It will also be capable of going out for more than one excursion, possibly two or three excursions. The great advantage with the vehicle is that, of course, it can get a further distance away from the lunar module. It will carry its own communication system such that even though it goes over the horizon, we expect to be able to transmit back to the Earth and carry on continuous communications with a crew. We'll carry the two crewmen, and it will carry experiments, and it will be able to return lunar samples as well. It'll carry the so-called rock boxes.
Go ahead, Norman.
Well, what stage of development is it in at this current time?
Right now, the contractor, Boeing Company, is beginning the design and fabrication of the vehicle. Fabrication, not yet, but certainly as far as the prototype vehicle is concerned, there's a certain amount of fabrication going on in that. But it's a very short-term program for developing this vehicle and providing it to us for the first mission that it will be used on, possibly, as I recall, as early as Apollo 16. The program to build the first one, I believe, is something like 18 months, and that's a pretty short time.
Well, Bill Land, where will the lunar rover be carried in relation to the lunar module? Will you have to build a larger lunar lander?
No. As a matter of fact, though, this lunar lander will have a greater capability. It will be a little bit heavier and have larger tanks, and that's one of the reasons we're able to carry this heavier payload. But outside, looking at it, it will look exactly the way the current one does. The difference is that in one of the quadrants, that is one of the four areas about the descent stage, around the periphery of it, that currently contains a couple of batteries, those batteries will be relocated to another space on the lunar module descent stage, and this lunar roving vehicle will, in a folded-up condition, fit into that quadrant. And through a system of deploying devices that are very simply operated by the crew, the vehicle can be deployed to the surface from this quadrant and the wheels extended and it ready to go.
Well, Bill? Go ahead, Red Turner.
I thought it might be interesting to add that this lunar rover the development of it is being supervised by Wernher von Braun and his people at the Marshall Space Flight Center. Since they finished building that big Saturn rocket, they've been working on other far-out projects. In fact, von Braun himself has quite a few ideas on some of these things of the future, and it's the development for the space agency is being conducted by the Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama.
I think that's very interesting, Rhett, that they're going from what amounts to about a 6-million-pound vehicle when it's fully loaded down to a 400-pound vehicle that they're designing now. I think this job should be considerably easier for them.
From space back to wheels on the ground.
Bill Land, is it conceivable that you could leave one of these vehicles on the surface of the moon and use it later by, well, for example, putting in new batteries or recharging the batteries on the vehicle?
Well, that is conceivable, Bill, but we're designing it really for the one-time use, and this is looking at the situation realistically where we know we want to investigate various areas of the moon, and we don't at the moment have any immediate plans for revisiting the same area. And therefore, this vehicle is being designed for that, with that purpose in mind, with that type of program in mind. So it'll be a one-time use vehicle. However, I'm sure that with very minor modifications, it could be either designed to such that the batteries could be recharged many times over, or such that we could replace batteries, and that would probably be the only change that would be required to have it usable for more than one mission.
They'll learn something about that just from examining parts of Surveyor being brought back now, parts of metal and other materials that have been there on the lunar surface for 2.5 years, won't they?
That's exactly right, and all of these bits of information that we're getting, particularly from the Surveyor spacecraft, will be applicable to future long duration and missions on the surface, and also missions that may revisit.
Well, if I recall the conversation between Pete Conrad and Alan Bean when they were down at the Surveyor 3 taking their samples, cutting the cables and so on, their conversation was to the effect that there was apparently very little deterioration. Even the glass was intact. I think the color of the glass had changed, and the color of some of the paint. But from just visual inspection, it would seem that for the
Well, certainly
surveyor had held up pretty well over 2.5 years.
The way it appeared to the two astronauts, Conrad and Bean, it did look very much the way it did when it left Earth. I think, though, that we'll learn a great deal more about that when we are able to put those pieces under instruments here on Earth and do a complete examination and investigation of just what did occur chemically and otherwise to these parts.
Rhett Turner, we're going to pick up a newscast here from our newsroom in just a moment. Would you give us a check on when we might expect to acquire communications again with the two spacecraft?
The spacecraft should come back within communication in 6 minutes and 15 seconds from now. They should come within view of the Earth.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That coverage continues following this summary of late world news.
Lunar explorers Charles Conrad and Alan Bean are about 15 minutes away from rendezvous with the Apollo 12 command ship piloted by Richard Gordon. Conrad and Bean made a perfect takeoff from the moon about 3 hours ago aboard the landing craft Intrepid. Both spacecraft are orbiting the moon as they maneuver for a link-up. President Nixon has accepted the resignation of Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge as chief of the U.S. delegation to the Paris talks on Vietnam. The resignation is effective December 8th. The White House said no replacement has been selected. Until a successor is named, a presidential spokesman said, the U.S. delegation will be headed by Philip Habib, who has served as Ambassador Lodge's senior advisor. In his letter of resignation, Ambassador Lodge said he had personal matters at home that required his attention. He did not elaborate. Mr. Nixon also accepted the resignation of the deputy chief of the United States delegation, Lawrence Walsh. Mr. Walsh said, and these are his words, in view of the manner in which these meetings are now being conducted by the other side, no purpose would be served by my continuing to hold this office. A Lebanese army spokesman reports about 100 men armed with machine guns attacked a military guard post at Nabatia in southern Lebanon. He said 9 attackers and 6 soldiers were wounded in the clash which followed. Delegates from the United States and the Soviet Union met at the Soviet embassy in Helsinki for the second private working session of the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks. They will meet again next Monday at the American Embassy to continue the discussions described as exploratory. 87 persons lost their lives in the crash of a Nigerian airliner as it approached a Lagos airport for a landing. The plane was on a scheduled flight from London. Most of the passengers were Nigerian Airlines workers. Senator Edward Kennedy eulogized his father during private funeral services at a Roman Catholic church in Hyannisport, Massachusetts. The 82-year-old Joseph Kennedy, father of a president and 2 United States senators, died Tuesday. The French news agency reports that the 2 youths who hijacked a Polish airliner to Vienna earlier today are 20-year-old Poles. That's the news in brief. This is John Cooley reporting.
This is the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the rendezvous and docking of the lunar lander Intrepid with the mother spacecraft Yankee Clipper. That should come in roughly about 30 minutes from now. Let's get a status report now from correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas.
2 minutes, 40 seconds until we should have acquisition of signal. And they say they're going to have the television turned on and working. The TV feed to us has not been put up yet, although we do see that Mission Control is getting a test pattern. The minute that the spacecraft come into view, this is what you may expect to see. The television camera, the one that's working aboard the command module, Yankee Clipper, has been mounted by Dick Gordon up in the window. And at this point, they should be right alongside each other, only 2 minutes away from acquisition. They should have finished that terminal phase maneuver, bringing them up very close together. And so we should be able to see through color television from the command module, Yankee Clipper, the view of Intrepid out just a few meters away. At this point, we expect that the moon will be moving slowly in the background behind Yankee Clipper. 1 minute and 30 seconds until acquisition of signal is expected.
At 145 hours, 13 minutes now into the flight, we're some 1 minute and 20 seconds away at this time from reacquiring the command module Yankee Clipper. As the two spacecraft come around the far side of the moon, Yankee Clipper will be configured for television, this to show the final phases of rendezvous and docking. Meanwhile, we've been furnished some numbers by the Houston television pool, which indicate, in addition to U.S. networks, the Atlantic and Indian Ocean satellites are covering a total of 32 countries with a potential audience of some 300 million persons. The Japanese news pool, also by satellite transmission, has a potential of 100 million persons. Line coverage is being transmitted to the Philippine Islands, Hong Kong, Hawaii, Korea, Australia, and Taiwan. In addition to that, tapes are being flown to Africa and the Middle East with a potential viewer count of 6 million persons. We're 10 seconds away now from forecast time of acquisition, and we'll stand by.
Standing by for the TV picture, we're a little concerned as to whether they're going to transmit it to us here, whether the NASA public information staff has configured our monitoring system. We're waiting for acquisition and a view of that TV picture. Apollo Control is coming back on shortly. Should have acquisition of signal by now. We're listening carefully to Mission Control. We'll be transmitting any communication from them along to you here through our VOA control center. You heard John McLeish in Mission Control running down all the parts of the world that live television is being fed by satellite.
Hello, this is Yankee Clipper, not clear on me.
Roger, the same.
As Yankee Clipper, Dick Gordon.
Tube.
Nothing yet, Dick.
Okay, I'm trying to roll a little more, give you some more gain.
Yankee Clipper and Intrepid have come into radio contact. No picture yet. That's Pete.
Clipper, Houston, we're going to need about a 60-degree roll right to get to high gain.
Clipper needs...
Pete Conrad reporting a closure rate of...
This is
38 feet per second, about 1.7 nautical miles away.
Just under 4 kilometers away, closing at about 43 kilometers per hour speed right now. Yankee Clipper was instructed to roll his spacecraft slightly in order that the high-gain antenna could be locked on, and that high-gain antenna is necessary.
145 hours, 16 minutes, standing by for any television transmission.
The high-gain antenna is necessary for us to have a television transmission.
We're going to have you at 1.2 miles. I concur.
Now 1.2 nautical miles apart.
Well, you sure look strange down there amongst all the sand dunes.
Sorry about that.
Yankee Clipper and Intrepid talking to one another. They're well within view.
1 mile, and I'm broke at 31 feet.
He's breaking at 31 feet. That's at about 30
kilometers per hour. 1 mile apart and a closure rate of 31 feet per second.
Just a little over 30 miles an hour.
1 mile, I got you at. Great.
Just about 1.8 kilometers apart now.
Television signal just beginning to come in now. We're standing by.
This should be in color. You may be able to see it all over the world, and John McLeish was telling you where all of this is being transmitted.
Clipper, Houston, we're getting your TV black and white now. Processing will be long shortly.
About 12 seconds delay for the color processor, the color converter to operate. There we are. Whoops.
Looking good in black and white, and we think we can see Intrepid.
Hey, how's it look?
Color
looking
signal
good
is
in black and white, and we think we can see Intrepid.
Hasn't quite settled down in the color converter
five,
yet.
Five.
Screen's 4, jumping around.
4,500 feet at 30 feet a second.
Roger.
Hold off a little more. Close down. Huh? It's close down. He's 4,000 feet away.
That's Al Bean making a comment on how far
that
away they are.
Okay, that's a break for you.
I think Dick said something about cutting the velocity down.
Yeah, Pete, you're looking pretty good. I got you 6/10 of a mile. Yeah.
6/10 of a mile. That's
okay.
Just about a kilometer.
Through,
just a bit over a kilometer away.
A mile here, and falling down. Thought I run through that secondary for a while. This primary doesn't smell too good either.
They're having a little trouble with the color television converter here on the ground. It's coming in good in black and white. They haven't been able to convert the signal into color properly.
I checked half a mile.
Madrid, Spain is the primary pickup point on Earth, the primary tracking station.
Be good.
Pete and Al and Dick talking to each other. Just meters apart now, less than a kilometer apart. Another try at the color converted signal, still jumping around. There we have it. Looks as though we can now see it. There's Yankee Clipper viewing the spacecraft Intrepid, less than a kilometer away, and you can see.
That's pretty darn good yourself.
You can see Intrepid going across a big crater in the background.
Houston, we got good color now. Looking good.
Okay, Peter, I've got you at a third of a mile.
If you're adjusting your color television set, don't move it too much yet.
Looking good.
They're still toying with the color conversion in the tent here at the control center. Wherever you are in the world watching this.
You're so ugly. Say again? How can you look so good when you're so ugly? I don't know. You look awful good yourself.
There you see Intrepid as it approaches.
Dick Gordon says, how can you look so good when you're so ugly? And Pete's response was, you look pretty good yourself.
Okay.
Intrepid, Houston, give us high bit rate, please.
Drawing closer, you can see the moon going by below. And your color
Houston.
Should be sort of a gray to very light brown, the surface of the moon. Almost a cross between concrete gray and milkshake brown. Those are the colors that the astronauts have reported are the true colors of the moon as they can see them from this distance. That milkshake cover color comment comes from Tom Stafford. The voice circuit cutting out there briefly. The signal's being interrupted. The feed, the transmission of audio.
Oh, he's out there when you give it a nice long stretch. Yes.
That's Conrad.
5 feet a second.
Okay. Intrepid going over a very distinct and deep crater in the background. Gee, it looks very close, although it's 100 kilometers below. They're moving at some 6,000 kilometers per hour across the lunar surface, 100 kilometers up. Intrepid drawing closer and closer. We can see it out the spacecraft window through television of Yankee Clipper. You hear Pete and Al talking. Every now and then a comment from Dick Gordon in Yankee Clipper. We are seeing this through Dick Gordon's eyes.
Intrepid
literally.
Posting in now. Dick Gordon aboard the Yankee Clipper will actually perform the docking.
it's easier to guide the nose of the Yankee Clipper.
Light off. It's off.
One of the lights being turned off aboard Intrepid.
On the aft. On the aft.
Say
again?
500 feet.
Yeah, I got 800.
Okay.
They say about 800 feet apart. That's less than just a little over 200 meters. Intrepid growing larger and larger in the picture as seen from the color TV camera aboard Yankee Clipper. The moon going by below, just gently from top to bottom in our screen as we view it.
You're looking better all the time, Yankee.
Just as Dick Gordon sees it. Pete says you're looking better every time, Yankee.
Yeah, I still have some film left.
Gordon says, keep going, I still have some film left. He's also taking color movie pictures of this closing. Their relative positions are almost still, except that Intrepid is coming directly toward Yankee Clipper. Both spacecraft very stable in relation to each other. Our sound from the moon has been interrupted again. There it's back.
Pete Frank going around the room, pulsing his flight control team as to status. We're looking good at this time.
Pete Frank is the flight director in mission control on this particular team. Not too far away now. There, we've lost our sound again.
500 feet.
Back with Pete saying 500 feet.
Check, I've got you. 540.
500 feet, just over... whoops, lost the sound again, it looks like. Between 100 and 200 meters apart now. Intrepid closing in on Yankee Clipper. The spacecraft is upside down as we view it. The bottom of the spacecraft faces the top of the screen, the direction of motion.
Is your tracker light on?
Protruding at the bottom, what appears to be the bottom from our view, is the rendezvous radar antenna, a dish antenna, which has brought them together. A comment there from Dick and Pete.
Closure rate of 3 feet per second.
About 1 meter per second, coming closer and closer together. Just a little less than 1 meter per second. The sound went out again. I think that... whenever the mission commentator, John McLeish, cuts in, it turns off the sound that we hear from Pete and Al and Dick. We've lost the sound again at this point coming from the mission control center.
2 feet a second, Dick. 200 feet.
That was interrupted there. We didn't get exactly the comment of Pete.
200 feet apart now.
About 70 meters apart. Very clear view of Intrepid bringing the second voyage from the moon back to the command craft. The second group of spacemen to explore the surface of the moon, Pete Conrad and
Bobby. Okay, the radar broke lock, Al. Will you take care of it?
Pete says the radar broke lock.
I'll go to the checklist.
Al, he's going into a checklist now as they're just less than 100 meters apart, down to about 50 meters apart.
How do you read me, Dick?
We're getting a very clear picture.
You're looking awful good.
Dick says you look awful good. Read you loud and clear. We can see the high gain antenna.
Let me bring the docking target back with you.
Say again?
Let me bring the docking target back with you.
You're almost unreadable. Relay through, Houston.
Roger. Intrepid, he wants to know why he didn't bring the docking target with you.
Pete says Dick.
Oh, I got it.
Almost unreadable. Dick wonders why he didn't bring the docking target
the
with
top.
Him. This is a gadget that Pete and Al must put up in the spacecraft window for Dick to use in docking. Pete says he has it. He's got it mounted in the window. Oh, I beg your pardon. This docking target is on the outside of the lunar module Intrepid. When they turn over, Dick should be able to see it.
That'd be a good one to remember.
That was all
Houston,
Clipper, Houston, go. We can see thruster firings now.
The small thrusters on the spacecraft Intrepid. Just a few meters away, right in front of the command module Yankee Clipper.
Here, go for logic.
And I'll have the logic on for you in a minute.
It's the logic in the computer.
Here's the logic.
There was a thruster firing, a blurp of rocket
That's
energy
it.
Right toward Yankee Clipper. That means he's breaking in relation to Yankee Clipper. Dick Gordon is now opening
Clipper,
up the
Houston,
television.
Clipper, Houston, you go for pyro arm and stand by to receive the skipper's gig.
Another nautical term.
Aye, aye, sir.
Aye, aye, sir, says Pete Conrad.
Okay,
Dick Gordon.
He's
got to finish a slight roll, a slight positioning of the spacecraft.
Okay, finish this 180-degree roll, okay?
180-degree roll. He's going to turn...
I don't understand what he's saying, Al. Do you understand?
Intrepid Houston, he's going to finish his roll maneuver now.
Dick Gordon is going to perform a roll maneuver now.
All right. That's it, sir.
That will make the lunar module appear to turn upside down, or actually right side up. The moon is turning over also to our view. This picture coming in now shows very gently in our view the moon and the spacecraft Intrepid turning over, turning upside down, or really right side up. The moon will now be upside down to our view. You can see the lunar horizon to the right and left of Intrepid. We've almost lost the sound. There it's back.
Uh-huh. Okay, covering what? Look at the umbilical cover. You suppose that's what got hit by lightning or something went on because it's brown? Look at the top of it's burned.
They're looking out
that's
at the...
That's what got hit. No, maybe it gets burned by other... I've got to find out. That'd be good.
Al and Pete are looking at some scorched material on the umbilical cover on the nose of Yankee Clipper. They say maybe that's what got hit on the ground, the lightning. They're speculating, of course.
Towards where?
Towards the book.
Dick Gordon made
a
comment.
Okay, Pete. How much further down
do
you want me to go?
Well, get down so I can see you. I'm lost. I'm losing you now.
We're losing him. He's drifting in a different direction. Dick Gordon is opening up the... Dick Gordon has opened up the zoom lens on the spacecraft TV camera. And Intrepid has drifted out of view. Now Pete is translating back.
I don't know where the moon is.
It's right there.
Now you see me?
Okay, go. I got you.
Okay.
Okay, do your maneuvers.
All right, let me stop my radio. Have you got it?
I got it.
Okay, you need to pull both rendezvous radar circuit breakers. Okay, wait just a second. Is the rendezvous radar in the right place?
It's at 320, which is...
The rendezvous radar is a bright white spot pointing toward the command ship Yankee Clipper.
If you get a chance, we would like that picture.
Intrepid Yankee Clipper, if you do get a chance, we would like the picture of a scorched nose of Yankee Clipper.
Hey, he's got something sticking out around the top of him, too. We ought to take a look. Right up there? At the top, see?
Wait a minute.
I'm still on my checklist here. All right?
I say something sticking out around the top of Yankee Clipper. This is something they haven't noticed before, because when they undocked the Intrepid craft, they drifted right off and didn't get too good a view of the nose of Yankee Clipper.
Give me the rest of that out.
Okay. Now they're facing the nose of Yankee Clipper head on. The moon is in the background, almost upside down, running at an angle across the picture screen.
Whatever swing on the top of the spacecraft is.
Pete wants to take a closer look at what's swinging on top of the spacecraft.
I bet it is. I bet you're right. Get a picture of that. Get a picture of that.
They're taking pictures of it.
All right, Dick, I'm going to pitch over 90 degrees now.
Okay, let's go. All right.
Pete's going to pitch over 90 degrees so that the docking collar will be pointed toward Yankee Clipper. Here he goes. He's beginning to pitch forward. In other words, the front face of the Intrepid is pitching forward. We may be losing our communications lock. The high gain antenna is supposed to move and point toward the Earth. When he completes this maneuver, I'm sure they will lock back on again. Now, he should stop that pitch maneuver right about now. He has now turned the top of the Intrepid toward Yankee Clipper. Houston requesting low data bit rate. The surface of the moon in the upper right corner of the screen. That's Dick Gordon saying, okay, go ahead. He's now going to roll 120 degrees. Now, all of this procedure will get that docking target in line for Dick Gordon. We can now see the hole, the docking collar, the docking tunnel in the top of Intrepid. Communications is cutting out. I don't believe it's cutting out to the spacecraft. It's just, I believe, in our circuitry here on the ground. I believe that Mission Control can hear them just fine. Now, he's completed his 120-degree roll. Intrepid. Every now and then, you can see small blurps of the small thrusters firing. They appear as little pink circles. Now they're drifting just a bit closer together. Dick Gordon will be the active docker in this case. It's easier to bring Yankee Clipper to Intrepid because the view from the command pilot's, the commander's seat in Yankee Clipper is much better for a docking procedure than it is from the window of the lunar module.
Now station keeping with the Yankee Clipper. We're at 145 hours, 34 minutes.
They're drawing a bit closer. I believe they've ended the station keeping. They seem to be getting closer and closer together, very slowly. In this case, this would be Dick Gordon. Pete says, Dick, you didn't set up the rendezvous target for me. There's a small window right in the center of the screen, and Pete is looking through that window at Dick Gordon. The docking collar is going off the lower left of the screen as Dick Gordon brings the spacecraft closer and closer. When they touch, if you're watching on a TV screen, you can see a slight jolt as they begin to latch in what is called a soft docking configuration. The center of the picture is pointing right at Pete Conrad's docking window. Dick says he didn't mount his target in that window for him, but Dick sees an external target just the same. The TV camera is mounted in a different window, which happens to be pointed right at Pete Conrad's docking window. A small circle. We can see Conrad's face inside. We can see him moving around, looking out the window. There's a soft latch. Capture. Capture, says Dick Gordon. Pete says, yes, sir, you're looking good. Dick says, let me stabilize a bit. We can see Pete Conrad's face through the docking window.
Oh, okay. Let the dynamics die out just a little.
Okay. It's hardly moving at all. Well, it's a target. I want to see it pumped down a little bit.
Okay.
Gordon wants to stabilize the craft in this soft position before he initiates the hard latching mechanism.
Okay. Go ahead. Do you retract? I'll let you retract.
Okay,
Charlie Brown. Okay. Here you go. Retract. Clunk. There went the hard latch. Oh, he's pulling it in. He's tightening it closer. In fact, Pete is actuating this. There was a jar. Home free. All the latches made the hard latch.
Super job, Mister. That was smooth, wasn't even wrinkled.
You're home free, says Dick Gordon. We're hard latched. Now, Pete, going to his checklist, you can see his face behind the docking window still in the television camera view, being transmitted live from space.
Roger, that's the end of the TV show. We've got some work to do.
Roger. We can see Pete through the window now.
Dick Gordon says... Hello there. They're looking at each other through the window.
12021. Roger, Pete. We can see your nose from here.
And Pete has a distinctive nose.
That's my sunglasses I got on in my helmet.
12021. 12021.
Intrepid Houston, I got some F-band angles for you.
The Marines are picking on it again.
Intrepid Houston, negative on the angles.
Go ahead. Okay.
Dick Gordon says that's the end of the TV show. We've got work to do. We're still getting a picture, however.
5,388 to the left waist. 35,389
Pete is reading off some weights of both LEM and CSM for the ground. They need this for calculations of maneuvers. Yankee Clipper and Intrepid have hard docked. They have completed their rendezvous just about 2 minutes ago, about 2 minutes before the hour. And the spacecraft camera, the command module camera, is still...
10 degrees, plus minus 5.
They're giving each other some information on tracking. This is coming from readouts of their... computer mechanism, their onboard navigation instruments. The ground has copied the weights of the two spacecraft.
Right, Houston, go ahead.
Okay, LEM weight is 5334. And CSM weight is 35600.
The command module weighs a lot more, 35,000 pounds to some 5,000 pounds of the Intrepid. The lunar module, the top stage. The command module still has a lot of fuel in it in that service module portion to bring the men home.
Did you copy?
Question to Clipper. Did he copy that? One of the antennas from one of the two spacecraft is not locked on solidly to Earth. It is quite possible that the Intrepid dish antenna is blocked from clear view of the Earth by the spacecraft, by the Yankee Clipper craft. We've had some difficulty with the Intrepid transmission since Pete Conrad performed his roll maneuver. Possibly that noise is coming from that one of the locks, the antenna locks on Earth being improper or somewhat weak. We can see Conrad's face through the window. He says he has some sunglasses on inside the helmet. A little bright vertical white streak, which Jerry Carr in Mission Control presumed to be Pete's nose. Pete says it's his sunglasses.
Clipper, Houston, go.
Gordon is asking to turn the TV off. Mission Control concurs, so we're about to lose the TV picture. How's the show? Gordon asks, how is the TV transmission? Mission Control says, very good. There goes the television. That was the color camera on board the Yankee Clipper.